Welcome everyone to another episode of Buffalo Bills Maybe Next Year, which just like Jason Voorhees rising from Crystal Lake at the very end to pull someone back into the water, so too did the Buffalo Bills climb out of the murky sewer that they had spent the whole movie in to kill once again.
But to be fair, Jason ended up in the lake not of his own volition, whereas the Bills, you know, threw themselves headlong into unfamiliar waters and banged their heads, only then to later, like, come back.
So is it more of like Jason when he was tied? See, as I've told Scott, the Friday that, I'm sorry, I'm Frank.
I'm Scott.
I'm Paul.
Oh, Paul is here. Good.
yeah, I'm part of the podcast. I just, you know, I'm mainly a listener. First-time listener, long-time caller. No way.
First-time listener, long-time participator. I rarely listen to these. I just talk in them. But Friday the 13th was on AMC, and it was kind of slow in plotting. I'd never really seen them when I was a kid, so I was like, I have no attachment to it. And now, of course, it's like a 35-year-old movie that wasn't like technically a good movie when it was made, and everybody sort of knows the story. So I'm trying to make myself watch it, and I just can't. I'm like, I'm not engaged. So I spent an hour reading every Wikipedia page for every Friday the 13th movie. So I now know, like, the functional plot of many of them, including some of their domestic grosses and which ones were commercial flops and which ones weren't.
Right, like, Seven was a commercial flop, I believe, despite it having Lyra Park Lincoln in the role as a telekinetic. And I don't know why Lyra Park Lincoln is the sell on that, because what did she ever do after that movie?
It's great. Like, I feel like I could have mentioned anything. Like, you're right. Oh, I was watching Korean, you know,
Korean gangster films from the 1920s.
Yeah, and he would have been like, oh, Gwanpangdo is the best, you know. And it had, of course,
the international gross wasn't that good because of the war in Indochina at that point. But
Paul knows everything.
This is what happens when you live a youth of not getting laid. This is how you'd spend that time. So it just makes it easy to come up with this information.
Well, I guess that's good, because you did things that – and I probably would have that comic book market, and I guess Scott was the one who got laid.
I was reading Tom Clancy novels alone in my basement. That's basically what I was doing.
The point is, I was very anxious to use this rising – some monstrous – you know, certainly the Bills were monstrous in their performance on Sunday. As our teaser image on Facebook today was the I think it's WGZ Channel 2 in Buffalo. Bills play like garbage, beat Vikings 17-16. was their crawl.
That's an all-timer. Really is. That's like
Deadspin.
That's up there with That's up there with like Harvard beats Yale 29-29. Like right. That's like, or whatever it was.
Dewey defeats Truman.
Yeah,
Harvard
exactly.
Beats Harvard 29-29. Here in DC, when Washington was truly terrible, on the first day of the year, they would have headlines like "Undefeated Washington plays winless Philadelphia." You know, those were cute.
Fun.
And certainly the 17-16, I think I said on Twitter that, one, I didn't care really whether the Bills won this game or not. And that was a little untrue, because it was very exciting and I was cheering at the end. But ultimately I was like, this game was so horrible, I don't know what I can take away from it. And also, this might be the worst game-winning drive. Every paper was very laudatory of Kyle Orton, who did put an okay drive together at the end, but
he did. I would say that, because how many drives does a quarterback start at his 20 and throw for 105 yards?
That's very true, but he also...
that does not happen very frequently. Some of it of his own volition, with intentional grounding penalties pushing him back. Some of it hanging on to the ball too long for sacks. But you know what? He needs to pad his numbers. He's like, I need some yardage on this drive. 80 won't do. I want 105.
I kind of wanted to think Chris Hogan. I feel like Chris Hogan and Sammy Watkins were the actual stars of the drive. So the only thing I didn't like was that he was leading the team, because he also took two really terrible sacks, like the same sacks he was taking all game, where the Bills offensive line is terrible, obviously. But when the pressure came in, tell me if you think this is funny. Kyle Orton has the pocket presence of an evening gown.
Yeah, it's too clever by half.
It's a little too clever by half?
Yeah, it took me a second, and I was like, it would have to be really funny for that extra half second to come in.
Right.
And it wasn't.
What clothes don't have pockets and would therefore not have a pocket presence?
I get it, but it's still not.
All right.
It's a bridge too far.
So somebody in the New Yorker would have laughed at that.
Yeah, perhaps. If it was two beavers talking on a log, It would have been hilarious.
In his pocket presents. Yeah.
Exactly.
And one's wearing an
Right. Evening. So somewhere Elaine Bennis's boss is laughing at this.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because, you definitely... know, jokes in there. Yeah.
Was that the boss?
That's a joke that maybe two people get in the world, but,
that,
you know.
Was that, that was the Pendant Publishing boss, right? Not Peterman.
I'm trying to remember. Yeah, I think it was a Pendant Publishing, like, who laughed at the joke that clearly made no, it wasn't even a joke. It was just nonsensical.
Anyway, the crazy news is the Bills won the game. It's not the most important, actually, it might not be the most important part of the game, given the injuries in the game, but the Buffalo, I don't want to say they were outplayed. They did some things very well on defense. They shut down the passing defense. There were a couple of very long runs by the rush defense, which really shouldn't have given up as much as they did. They got sort of crushed in the run, but they didn't let the Vikings beat them through the air. They sort of were shooting themselves in the foot the whole week, and it was really the difference between the Patriots and the Vikings. They basically played the same game 2 weeks in a row with a little bit of a flip script on defense. I think they played the same quality game against the Vikings as they did against the Patriots,
really?
Maybe. And they managed to beat a far inferior team because that's how poorly the Vikings are. That's what I would say.
Okay.
Why don't you go, and then we'll let Paul have some extended comments because I've been talking a lot. Sorry.
Well, good. I'll just go quick because I'm not sure I'd agree. I think they probably played worse in this Vikings game than they did in the Patriots game.
Okay,
honestly.
That's fair.
I think it was just that bad. And I think, honestly, I give kudos to Paul, I think, for the most intelligent comment on Twitter, which was the comment about intensity and focus. And that's just all this game was to me. I think this was a game that they saw after last week's loss as kind of – not that it should have been. I'm definitely not saying it should have been. I mean, I think we, you know, I made the big, you know, like they're going to win by two touchdowns. And I think I was probably channeling what the Bills were thinking. And you still have to go out there and try, even against an inferior team. And you have to focus. You have to concentrate on every play. And when you don't, that's when turnovers and stupid penalties happen. And I think so Paul nailed it. And I think that's just a symptom of this team until they grow up, until we get a better coach, until they learn how to win. It's just going to be this kind of, you know, 1 week they could, you know, go, you know, head to head with, you know, almost any team in the league, I'd say. And then other weeks they just can't, you know, but they're not going to win a lot of those games because they'll continue to make stupid little mental mistakes that end up costing them games. So I'll turn it over to Paul because I think he nailed it.
Yeah, no, thanks. I appreciate that. And that was what I just kept thinking as I was watching this game is there's, you know, four turnovers, three fumbles and a dumb interception. You know, that just indicates people whose heads aren't in the game, you know, and I felt like the whole game they're feeling like, well, we can hang around with this team and eventually they'll make a stupid enough mistake that it's not going to matter. And the Vikings, to their credit, never really did. You know, Bridgewater had one bad pass, hit Brandon Spikes in the back that McKelvin intercepted. The other bad pass McKelvin intercepted, you know, again, it was a bad pass. It was also a great read by McKelvin. Mm-hmm. The Vikings played, you know, a relatively decent game for the Vikings. They didn't make any big mistakes. They went with the old strategy of let's put a no-name running back in there to run for over 100 yards on the Bills.
Great strategy.
Yeah, which is. Classic. I mean, they actually benefited from not having Adrian Peterson available. You know, it's kind of like, you know, we need to put in a backup against the Bills. You know, that's how you roll
against the backup some yards. Get him some mileage. Let him see the field.
Yeah. Help him in his contract year. Show you're looking out for him. So it was just, it was, you know, one after the other. The Bills, they kept moving the ball on offense. They outgained the Vikings by something like 120 yards. I know Frank will probably have the stats in front of him.
I have the stats, yep.
Yeah.
So total, just quickly, total yards, 373 for Buffalo, 276. So not quite 100 yards total.
Now, yeah, about 100 yards. So still outgained them by a lot of yards, but they took dumb penalties again. Some of them were questionable, but some of them were just stupid penalties. And it just really, I can't say never, of course. I can't recall in the modern era of Bills football, the 15 playoffless years of football, the team just playing that badly, and then at the end being like, all right, we'll just go down and win this now. So it was at the same time the most strange combination of discouraging and encouraging victory that you could have. So that's one of the thoughts off the top of my head on this one.
Okay, yeah, and just to clarify, my thought was that the Bills played no better than they played in New England.
Okay.
I'm certainly amenable to the idea they played worse.
Yeah.
But I was like, you know, the lackluster performance in New England wasn't, or against New England wasn't enough. And so this similar, if, as you say, worse, I would probably get behind that performance is only made a victory by the virtue of the Vikings, who, frankly, did have the game won. You know, I'm 80. I said something like Kyle Orton, 80 yards, and you know, no running backs, like just like we drew it up, guys. Yeah. And strangely, it was kind of like just how they drew it up. That said, I think there was some really nice things in the game. I mean, Sammy Watkins did a great job. You know, 112 yards, the game-winning touchdown, excellent poise. Chris Hogan came up with a couple of big catches. He recovered after, you know,
after a
terrible fumble, right? But he pulled it together. Even Scott Chandler made a catch after
Chandler classic,
which was hilarious because Frank's feed was obviously about one to two plays behind.
Yeah.
So it's funny to watch him cursing chat and then be realizing like, yeah, we'll get a tweet from Frank in about 2.5 minutes or so praising Chandler.
I said something along the lines of, there's the Chandler I knew never left.
Yes.
And then like 2 minutes later, I'm like, there's the Chandler I never knew.
He made a big play. I mean, he made a stupid drop, but then what does he do? He comes back and in a high pressure situation, 4th and 20, that was the ball game. It's like, all right, I got this. We're good.
No, it shows you exactly, again, you talk about focus, that is it. That is Chandler 100%, because he absolutely can catch. He's made great catches over the years, like really acrobatic, difficult catches. And then when he's not paying attention or when he's already thinking downfield, that's when he drops it. That's when he just loses focus for that 1 second, and he's not good enough to overcome that. And it shows, I guarantee you, Orton went back to him in the huddle and was like, hey, you got to freaking catch this next one, or I don't even know what you're doing here.
Yeah, maybe EJ Manuel can't say that to a guy like Scott Chandler.
And maybe that it, you know what? You maybe know, you're right.
Kyle Orton's been around, so
he knows when Scott Chandler effed up, which is frequently.
And the exact other thing on that play, I don't know if EJ Manuel would run that 4th and 20 play so quickly. He would probably like, let's make sure I get all the ducks in a row, whereas Orton had the presence of mind to say, the Vikings are in a bad coverage here. They're not communicating well. Let's get to the line, snap the ball, and see if I can catch them in it. And you know, I don't know if EJ has the experience to do that.
This is a totally heads-up play. And then also getting the guys down to the 1 yard line for the spike, which that's a difficult thing to do from 30.
It did take for freaking ever, but at least he did it. At least he did it. Yeah.
Of course, we're talking about offensive linemen trying to run about 26, 27 yards and line up and get downfield. So we can only blame Kyle so long for that taking such a long. Well, we're not blaming Kyle. We're crediting him, actually. But
They're NFL offensive linemen. I mean, at the slowest, they're gonna run a 40-yard dash in like 10 seconds, and this was like a 25-yard dash. It took them like 15-20 seconds just to get down there.
And
they've
only been running it 10 at a time for a while now.
Yeah, so. This is true.
They also gave Hogan a terrible spot on that play, which thankfully was inconsequential. Like he caught that ball at about the 1/2-yard line where he was down, and then all of a sudden it's back at the 2. Again, that helps. Helps Kyle Orton have a longer touchdown pass, at least. So
yeah, add a couple of yards, and it might have given them like a little stepping room. And truthfully, it was a great pass play. You know, outside flat, looking for the.
After he had been burning them on the slant a couple of times previously, you need to do the slant out.
Two scores for Watkins in the game. The other, I think, person is Booby Dixon, who, God bless the announcer, who said feeding Booby or a steady diet of Booby all day.
He also at one point yelled "Booby," which I actually rewound on my DVR, just rewound the live TV just to hear him yell "Booby."
Booby did get tired though, and I was a little during that one play where he didn't pick up the pass coverage, and I was a little disappointed. So no one said he looked flat. And I would like it if he evades tacklers that we call it a nip slip.
Those were two good puns. I'm glad we've now broadcast them to the wider audience, and hopefully we don't get mocked.
All six, it's much bigger than the one people on Twitter. It's now the six people that listen to this. Represent. Hi, Mom. but no, he kind of stepped in and did well for a guy who was probably supposed to get 6 carries, and he ended up with, how many did he have? He had 13, plus he was in on a bunch of passing plays, and certainly he looked winded towards the end there. They were definitely, you could tell he just was exhausted. And he won't be the only running back this week. They'll have Bryce Brown will be activated, so that could help, as well as a full week of preparation. So hopefully that's a positive that the Bills have a couple of guys that you know can step in now that the now that Spiller and Jackson are out, which we'll talk about in a minute.
Although I do worry about all the Bryce Brown love, like everyone's saying, like, oh well, at least for the injuries, this amazing Bryce Brown will get to be in there. I feel like we've we've gone down this road before. We fall in love with a guy who's been inactive for weeks. Like, oh, finally, he'll get his chance. And then he never does anything. The one exception I can think of is Marcus Easley. He used to be inactive all the time, and then we realized he was a special teams god. But even that took time. He's never going to be the receiver people were saying he could be. So let's hope Bryce Brown makes me sound like an idiot. But really, are we expecting more than 30 yards out of him on Sunday? Well, especially against that Jets D. Well, we'll get to that later. But
yeah, those are just my thoughts. It's going to be tough sliding.
I think I was justified, and Paul was just in picking a losing game. I just wanted to say that.
Wait,
I wanted to
Paul,
talk about me some
did
more.
Paul?
No, I picked a winner, actually, but I was close. Yeah. I had 20 to 17 Bills, but I didn't think it was going to be this ugly at 20-17. I thought Minnesota was going to play better, and the Bills were going to play okay. Yeah. Instead, the Minnesota played like Minnesota, at least in the two other games of theirs I'd seen some of, and the Bills just played the... Again, arguably their worst game of the season. Scott, you had them at 31-9 Bills, and Frank, you changed it three times from 19-13 to 19-12 to 19-10 your prediction, but Minnesota. But you're still pretty. You weren't far away. I mean, honestly, if they don't score on that final drive, the final is 16-10. So you would have been pretty close.
You would have been really close.
I was waiting for them to get I was waiting for the Bills to turn it over, and then Minnesota to kick a field goal.
I mean, and that's the other thing is that if we don't get two sacks on that last drive when they were driving, or the second to last drive, I forget which one, and take them out of field goal range so that they end up having to punt, then it's 19-10, and then it doesn't matter if we score a touchdown. So it's bizarre to see this team do enough to win after normally they frequently, do enough to lose.
Right.
And again, it kind of shows you that the Vikings are really just not that good, and the Bills may not be that good, but they're also probably not the worst team in the league at this
Buffalo
point.
Buffalo Bills would be 3-0 in the NFC North right now.
Yes, they would be.
They would be the division champions.
Well, yeah, I mean, with two games against the Packers to go, so that would be
well,
the tough
yeah,
part.
But hey, wins are wins. excuse moi.
Okay, can I cough too? I feel like I want to join the club.
Yeah, please. We should get cough buttons.
Sure. I did look up the Friday the 13th grosses, by the way. It was the second lowest grossing one.
Number
because
four or five, whatever the first one that was supposed to be the end of the series was the worst one, right?
Actually, no, the first one was the... Oh, yeah, the... okay, so they went... The highest was...
Closing ones. They said all the ones that were supposed to be closing installments.
Yeah, final chapter was... it depends on how if we go domestic or worldwide. So let's just go with the easy ones. That the original was $59 million. And then Freddy versus Jason in 2003 was $114 million. So those are the trendsetters. Remember, those are in the box office dollars of those days. So the $59 million is probably twice that. But yeah, the one I referenced was only $19 million. And then Jason Takes Manhattan was only $14.34 million, which was the lowest in the series. So no one wanted to see Jason Takes Manhattan. Now I can close this window in my Chrome tab.
Dun, dun, dun. Brought to you by Chrome. Let's do three stars, and then let's the elephant in the room we haven't talked about. Let's get to that.
So the three stars, as I was talking to the guys before the podcast officially started, this is actually surprisingly tough because normally at least one team plays sort of well, whereas in this game I think both teams really played pretty terribly, except for the fact that there were also some fairly good performances by some players, and it came down to be really hard to, there was a clear number one in my mind, but then two and three, and then the two honorable mentions, they're kind of interchangeable, so I'd be interested to see how you guys stack them. But basically, I had at your two honorable mentions, I had two defenders. I had Chad Greenway, who had 15 tackles and a forced fumble, who was a beast at Iowa and was injured for the last couple of weeks, which is probably why I forgot about him. He is as actually pretty good. And then I also had Jerry Hughes. I had him at 5 tackles, and it says 1.5 sacks. I think previously he had 2 sacks. I think they might have taken like a half of one away.
Denoris Searcy has the other half.
Yeah, Denoris had the other half.
Okay, by the way, not to interrupt Scott, but I had also predicted mine, and I had, as honorable mention, Hughes and Greenway. Now
I'm in a different boat than you guys. I have Marcel Darius as my third.
So we don't give the answers to Scott. I want to see if he has the same answers I do. I'll hold this up to the screen, Frank, after he does it.
Okay.
So you can see the answers, but there's...
If you want to hold them, pull it back a little, and you have to talk so I can see it.
Okay. So there are my answers. The second one, number two, is tough to read, but You get the point on it.
Yeah, okay. I think I do. Yep.
All right. But anyway, continue along, Sky. I want to see how closely we're matching.
This is very complicated, isn't
okay.
it?
Okay.
So I had then coming in with the number three, I had Everson Griffin, who is the defensive end for the Vikings, who had 8 tackles and 3 sacks and 2 tackles for loss, and was kind of the leader of a Vikings defense that basically kind of overpowered the Bills for the offensive line for the Bills for much of the game until the last drive when they basically kind of fell apart. Though actually they didn't even fall apart on the last drive. They still got 2 sacks on the last drive.
No, they did, yeah. So it had been a 4th and 20 and a 3rd
yeah,
and long.
So. Exactly. So it was really kind of hard to put it on them. But, you know, I think he was definitely pretty close to dominant. And then for second star, I had Liotis with 4 tackles and 2 interceptions because he had 2 interceptions. One of them was, again, like kind of gift-wrapped, and the other one was not quite gift-wrapped, but also like in a good position for him to make a play on it. But, you know, just making those plays and setting up the offense, I think, was key enough. I think there's been a shocking disamount of lack of that from the Bills defense, especially in terms of when you have the chance to make a big play, you know, not dropping the ball, not, you know, running past the fumble, whatever it is. And then for your first star was, of course, Sammy Watkins.
The universal.
Yeah, exactly. 9 catches, 122 yards, 2 touchdowns.
Game winner.
Many, many clutch catches, the game winner, you know, humble after the game. You know, again, like,
you can
if the Bills win a Super Bowl, the discussion about Watkins stops. You know, if they don't win a Super Bowl, I think you're going to be talking about this kind of 2 number ones for this guy for a while. But at the same time, like, you know, it's kind of tough to start off at a better clip than where he started.
They had him in comparison to Lee Evans, the last rookie receiver to come in and make it. He's a little bit ahead of Lee in a lot of in some of those categories. Mm-hmm. But this was the kind of performance I'd never even really saw from Lee, where he created separation, went out and got footballs. He looked like a receiver, like one of those special guys that goes and gets the ball.
Absolutely. No, I mean, I love Lee, you know, as much as anybody, and I will put some of it on the coaching staff at the time.
The terrible quarterbacks.
And the quarterbacks that we had, where they were just basically like, Lee, go run a fly route, and then maybe you're lucky and it'll land in your hands.
Right.
But other than that, he was smaller, and he couldn't break away on – he wasn't as crisp in his route running as I think Sammy is, and I think that's – and he's definitely not, in terms of his physicality, he's not anywhere close to where Watkins
is.
So we haven't seen
Watkins
as much of that.
Watkins is a special guy, and it was nice to see him have, like, a dominant game.
Yeah.
Paul, go ahead. You were pretty close. So
I was, yeah. We each had the same honorable mentions and the same number one with Sammy. I also had 1 Viking and 1 Bill on this list, but mine were different. My number 3 was a Bill named Marcel Darius. I think he doesn't show up too much on the stat sheet, but he was in that backfield all day. Really caused a lot of issues, especially for Teddy Bridgewater. I believe he knocked down a pass like he's been doing in previous weeks pretty much routinely. So I had him in there. And then number 2, I had Jerick McKinnon for Minnesota. I just think, you know, a guy coming off the bench, has played a little bit this season, actually racked up some yards earlier in the year, but really, you know, he made some Bills defenders miss tackles. And is that on the Bills to a degree? Of course it is, certainly. But, he, you know, it's still him doing it. He really did a good job finding the holes. He showed a lot of patience. Impressive running back. Would not mind having him on the roster with Sammy and Fred sidelined.
I had McKinnon second or third, and McKelvin was the other one, and then Sammy. But I actually do really like, and I would, upon further review, I would put in the defender that you did, the 3 sack Everson Griffin. That's a pretty dominant performance, and I hadn't really looked through.
Yeah, no, I mean, and again, some of that, I was kind of debating between Hughes and Griffin in terms of where they were on the list, because both of those offensive lines are so shoddy that it's kind of hard to really get a good, you can't say it's a great performance when you're going against generally like just a terrible, terrible kind of offensive line.
Right.
So.
I mean, we all make the assumption, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Craig Urbick's obviously slept with Doug Marone's wife, correct? I mean.
No, I think that's clear.
And he found out, right. That's the other, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the second half equation. And then Craig Urbick, like, took a shit in his toilet, flush, like, pretty much.
Or in his cornflakes or something.
It's clear that Craig Urbick is better than
persona non grata
than either one of our guards, I think I'd say at this point. I mean, Piers too, probably, because Piers consistently grades out as terrible. So I don't know what to do with the offensive
just
line.
Just terrible.
Also, I will say the one thing is, last thing on three stars, I did give Hughes it because I think like I was neglecting Jerry the last couple weeks, and he has been playing great the last couple weeks. So I wanted to make sure he gets some love. So that's, but Marcel Ossie obviously also playing great. But I feel like the minute I give him like first star or something, that's when the suspension comes down and he gets like another like four games or something.
So. Right. Okay. So the Bills signed. This is the obviously the what we've all been really wanting to talk about is the Bills signed running back Philip Tanner from the Cowboys. Now they had tried to get a fella off the Titans practice squad. That didn't work, so they had to go out and sign this Philip Tanner guy. And that's the big story this week, right? It's a big story because of what happened. You see, the Buffalo Bills broke two of their running backs this week. C.J. Spiller got hurt at the end of his 53-yard run, like the one big one that he broke off, yes?
That was it. The only run he had all game. At least going yards. At the end of his season, he bumped up his yards per carry quite a bit for the season based on that one run.
He might have, end of the season, might be the end of his career with Buffalo, too. We'll have to touch on that.
He has been placed, and I didn't see this reported until a little while ago, and apologies that he was placed on short-term IR, which gives the Bills the ability to bring him back if they want.
He can't come back for Week 16 against the Raiders, technically.
He's not going to come. Okay, he can. He had a collarbone surgery, which everyone says is 3 to 4 months.
Just saying, that's what they did.
Okay, well, all right, that's fine. Maybe there is, and you know what? That might be... I don't know how contracts work, but I know sometimes that, certainly in baseball, like there are things about eligibility requirements that affect contract performance pay. And
right, and he's also a guy who I feel like if there's any chance he can play, you want to keep that open. It's not like Jonathan Meeks at safety. Like, hey, he might come back, he might not. Screw it. Put him in season-long IR. How much do we need Jonathan Meeks?
Right.
No, that's a fair point.
And, of course, Fred Jackson in a similarly weird injury pulled his groin, and he's going to be out as little as 2 to 3 weeks. He might be back right after the bye week, but that's usually a month-long injury from what I've read.
And I looked at it. It's a hilarious, of course, that literally we have the bye week, we have the Kansas City game right after that, and then theoretically he would be back in time for the Dolphins game, except for the fact that the Dolphins game is actually on a Thursday night. So if you wanted to do exactly 4 weeks from last Sunday...
We're not
playing a game that Sunday. We're playing it 3 days early. So now again, Fred's a gamer, so I think he'll probably be out there. But honestly,
if he can go, he probably will be. Yeah,
because he's Fred Jackson. But honestly, at the same time, groin injuries are really bad.
Co-college. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a tough break for the Bills, who, frankly, had been waiting for the injury bug to hit. They hadn't really, other than Kiko. I mean, but during the season, they'd kind of.
Chris Williams, sort of, a little bit, the left
Kyle
guard.
Williams
but
missed some time.
Yeah, but not.
And Chris Williams' absence has only been highlighted by how terrible Cyril Richardson has been. It's not like he was himself a Pro Bowl loss of any sort.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And then the other thing was, you know, the rotating cast of linebackers. It was always one out, Bradham or Spikes or Brown.
But to have the two biggest pieces of the – well, maybe they're not, but Fred Jackson and C.J. Spiller are the two biggest – the two huge running backs for a team that is supposed to be run first, out. Now, C.J. Spiller wasn't giving anyone the production that they wanted, frankly. Fred Jackson, however, was going above and beyond, and I know this because he's on my fantasy team. But the other thing, and I'd read this somewhere, and I'm kind of thinking about it now, is that since the advent of Kyle Orton, this has not actually been a run-first team. It's a very different team. It's a very different offense. They've sort of abandoned the thing that EJ did, which was, you know, lots of the, you know, handoff, what do you call that?
The read option.
And a lot less handoffs, period. Orton has thrown, I pulled this up, 43, 38, and 43 times in each game, each of his three games. So, And that includes a Detroit game that they weren't ever really out of, and a Minnesota game that they weren't ever, you know, terribly.
You couldn't have said, oh, they had to give up on the run because they were behind three touchdowns.
Right. You know, like, New England, maybe you did, right?
But yeah.
This is a pass first team now. Their strength is their wide receiving core, especially with these two guys gone, and a much better quarterback comparatively.
Right. Say what you want about Mike Williams kind of underperforming. Like, when he's on your bench, that says good things about not just Sammy, but also Chris Hogan and Robert Woods.
Right. And the fact that he might not be there if a guy like Marquise Goodwin can play. Like, that's a toss-up at this point, particularly with some of the special teams concerns. Now that a guy like Booby Dixon and Bryce Brown are moved up, those guys aren't going to be special teaming, probably. You know, so you're going to have other guys who can, and I don't know that Mike Williams is one of those guys. Caveat, by the way, Kyle Orton's passer rating, 88.1, 94.1, and now 95.4 in each of his three games, which are eerily similar. This is very consistent. 300-ish yards, 1 to 2 touchdowns, 1 interception.
And a dumb fumble.
And a dumb fumble, maybe, right. This was his worst game, and he has the best rating. I feel like it's not even close. But his completion percentage was way up, so when he did throw, it was good. Anyway, the point is, where is this team without those two running backs, and or how much more passing are they going to do?
Yeah, what's interesting to me is, and you highlight this exactly in what you were saying, I think for the Bills' offense we expected them to be this year, this is a huge loss. For the Bills' offense, it has been, it's a loss, certainly, but it doesn't have maybe the same impact we thought it all would. CJ just never got on track this year, save of two long runs. Fred has been Fred. He's been durable. He's broken tackles. He's gone to the open field. He's been a reliable pass blocker. But it's not like he's put up gaudy numbers. He hasn't had a 100-yard game. I don't think either of the Bills' backs have had a 100-yard game yet.
They've had him in total yards, but not in rushing.
Right, not in just rushing. So we're gonna miss that performance, and we'll certainly, I think, miss Fred out of the backfield because he's been pretty effective as a receiver out of the backfield. But, I mean, the Patriots proved in some game. I remember them starting a game with 21 passes once, and they're like, well, we're just going to substitute the running game with the short passing game. So, you know, this is where you look for little four-yard passes to Chris Gregg, little wide receiver screens, little, you know, pitches to running backs out of the backfield. You know, I think that's the effect it's going to have, and I think the short passing game can be more effective because now you have Kyle Orton hitting a lot more passes downfield. A 4th-and-20 pass to your tight end down the middle of the field on 4th-and-24. The deep pass to Watkins for a touchdown. His pass to Goodwin against the Lions. The pass to Hogan. Those were all situations where teams paid by trying to, you know, limit the Bills' short passing game and not respecting them, in the deep game. And to be honest, even though those plays are few and far between, I think I just named four, those were all huge impact plays. The Watkins TD this week got them on the board. The Hogan catch got them in position for the second Watkins touchdown. The Marquise Goodwin reception got them back in the game in Detroit, and they scored on the next play. And then I mentioned the one for Chandler kept the game alive last week. So even though that's only four examples right there, those four examples all had a huge impact because they can pass downfield. So will the running backs being out have an impact? It will. You can't lose guys like CJ and Freddie without it having a negative effect. At the same time, I think the way the offense has functioned, they'll be able to offset that.
No, I think I agree with Paul. I think I would say I'm about as close to saying no impact as you can get without saying no impact, because frankly, I think the way you pointed out, Paul, the way the offense has worked this year, it's the explosive plays that we're not seeing in the running game. And you can have, I mean, explosive plays in the passing game, explosive plays in the running game, you know, consistent guards in the running game, consistent yards in the passing game. We've been able to get consistent yards in the running game usually. I mean, it's not been like, you know, like 5 yards in a cloud of dust. It's been 2 or 3, or maybe, you know, Fred can get you an extra, you know, 1 or 2. And my perspective is I think between Anthony Dixon and Bryce Brown, we can get that consistent yards in the running game. What we're not going to get with them is the explosive plays, I think, in the running game. At least, Brown had a couple in the offseason, in the preseason, and I think he's a talented back. I think he can come in and do some good things for us. Now, yeah, is he going to – I don't want to raise expectations too much, so I don't think he's going to set the world on fire, but I think he can be, you know, a rotation quality, starting quality kind of back in this league. It may just take a little time, and especially not against the Jets on Sunday. But that said, given the way that the offense is working right now, I think, you know, Fred, as good as he is not getting you, you know, the CJ type of 50-yard breakaway plays. I mean, I think Fred's had a couple of those this year, but maybe one or two. But you're not consistently getting those. So without those, you know, you really have to look to the passing game for the explosive kind of plays, the plays where you don't have to go 10, 15 plays down the field every time. You can take it and one play, get you down to the 10, and then get in on the next play or take it all the way to the end zone. That shortens your field. It makes your offense a lot more efficient. And I think it's going to be a lot on Kyle because when I say Kyle, I mean literally on Kyle, because it's going to be people falling on top of him. Yeah. That's going to be the biggest problem with running the offense more through without having an explosive kind of run offense that we were hoping for. It puts more on the offensive line in terms of blocking on those longer plays. And I just don't know that Kyle is going to make it through the whole season with
this
offensive line.
You're kind of back to the Drew Bledsoe days where you have a guy with a strong enough arm. He's certainly not Drew Bledsoe, even when Drew Bledsoe was here, but he, you know, has a strong enough arm to deliver those types of passes to these wide receivers, but mm-hmm. has a real problem with mobility. And mm-hmm. when the Bills lost some offensive line help in the second year, and you saw what happened to, you know, and Travis Henry stopped being Travis Henry, if I remember right.
Yeah, that's
about string
right.
of explosive running backs the Bills have had that they failed to capitalize on.
But then they proceeded to have 1,000-yard seasons elsewhere, such as Travis Henry and Willis McGahee and Marshawn Lynch.
Right. No, we have great running back, and the next one will be C.J. Spiller, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. But Spiller wasn't giving the Bills those yards at all this year. I mean, you're saying that Fred only had maybe one or two explosive runs.
No, I know.
CJ didn't have any.
CJ had one.
Right.
And it was his last.
And it was the one that he broke his collarbone on, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I don't say that in a spiteful tone or anything. I just like that is the
That's
weird freaking irony of the universe here. I think missing Fred's going to be a big deal, but a lot of the play and offense has been, especially against teams like New England and whatnot, have not even been about runs. They've been about swing passes into the flat. And so it's just a matter of if you can create that same kind of space for a guy named like Anthony Dixon or Bryce Brown, that might be where you bring in Bryce Brown to see if he can, you know, use his speed in that way. It's a step down, of course it is. But there might be a blessing in disguise here that Kyle Orton is at the helm because they're going to run a different offense than they were originally trying to run. How often have we as fans been frustrated when a team keeps banging their head against the wall and they don't change it, specifically in Buffalo, like Dick Geron and his conservative play calling, Chan Gailey and his nonsense pop gun offense stuff, Mike Mularkey. Each of these guys really had a problem like scrapping something that and sticking with something that worked, you know? I remember that game where Marshawn Lynch had like 14 carries for 190 yards against San Francisco.
Yeah.
And it was like, why didn't he have 15 carries? He had 16. It was substantially, it was less than 20. And I think it was much less than 20. And so even though, you know, it's an abandonment of the original plan, I'd like to applaud the idea that at least they're trying something different. Now Hackett, it needs to pull his shit together. As an offensive coordinator, this run pass stuff isn't going to work, especially, you know, with Anthony Dixon and Bryce Brown.
He's been a little more aggressive. I will give him credit for that. I think he's been. I mean, I think that's partly out of Orton, and I don't know how much Orton has in the audible kind of toolkit that he's allowed to use in terms of getting the passes and checking out of one run play into another play, checking out of run play into a pass play. I mean, Orton, at this point, he doesn't give a shit. Like, he's going to do what's best what he thinks is best for to win the game and to get yards. So I don't think he cares as much about run-pass balance. And it's kind of tough to argue with him. He's been in these positions longer than most of our coaching staff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Considered. I mean, he's been in the NFL longer than Marone, to a certain extent.
That's true. Yeah.
As at a starting kind of where the decision is on you, like Marone, he's an offensive coordinator and a Peyton, but he wasn't like, you know, that's
which is
something
sort of like a mouthpiece for Sean Payton too,
to a certain extent, and that was only there for a couple years, whereas Orton's been a starting quarterback since 2004 or 2005 basically, and you know, and Hackett is even less experienced. So anyway.
Yeah. I think Scott nailed that right there, because I was thinking about three big plays for the Bills. We talked earlier about the Chandler 4th and 20 last week, which was Orton kind of rushing the play along, seeing the Vikings didn't have their stuff together. We look at him audibly to a run play from a pass play in Detroit for that two-point conversion, knowing that the Lions were in a setup where it was going to be best to hand to Fred. How's your hand there, dude, going, Frank?
I'm seeing if I can block my very small wife's face.
Oh, okay. It's kind of like the kids in the hall, I'm crushing your head, except it's I'm blocking your face. Anyway. Dude, it was just very odd. I'm like, wow, what's...
Enjoy this interlude, podcast audience.
Plus, I noticed you weren't really looking, so I figured I could do it for a while you were in that and you looked up, and it was like, what? Okay.
Yeah, because I'd actually looked up the stats of that 49ers game, and it was 16 carries, 134 yards for Marshawn in a game that they would lose 10-3. So let's
talk about losing to Sean. I'm very disappointed.
Yeah.
Let's talk about losing to Sean Hill. And Frank Gore that day averaged 2.8 yards a carry, by the way. So right.
There was no reason to lose that game at home against San Francisco except for Dick Geron.
Right.
Let me ask
So that Orton play, and then the last thing I wanted to bring up with Orton, to go along with your point about how he's been in the NFL longer, right? There's an argument to be made that they've succeeded better when Orton's running the show. Remember that Patriots drive when they were trying to come back and the punt team was set on the field and Orton said, no, go back, push them back, threw a fourth down completion. The Bills scored on that drive to at least get within 8 points in the fourth quarter. So you could say that, you know, this guy, he knows how to it seems to operate more effectively when you hand the controls to Orton than it has when you've handed them to Hackett.
Which is something we'll need in the next quarterback we have, is that kind of guy. So maybe this is a smart move to kind of see how a good quarterback can kind of take control of a game. One last question before we get to Facebook. So we're going to do one question, then Facebook, then the state of Bills history, then we'll wrap up with the Jets preview. Have we seen C.J. Spiller's last game as a Buffalo Bill? Paul?
Yeah, I would say that's probably it. I'd like to think he's not going to pick up his... He's probably not going to come back this year. That's the first thing, even though they put him on short-term IR. Right. Collarbone injuries are deadly. Secondly, he's not going to exercise his $2.2 million option because he could get more even from the Bills. Third, I think there's going to be a team desperate for a playmaker who's seen the type of plays that CJ can make when he's on his game. And I think that team is probably going to give him a lot of money, and I think the Bills are going to look back and say, you know, man, we really would love to have CJ on board. He's such a great playmaker. But at that money and with our needs, and with two younger running backs in Dixon and Brown that they've invested somewhat in by picking them both up this year via free agency and trade, I think they will probably allow him to move on.
I agree. And you got Fred Jackson, who you put on, gave another year to his contract, so he'll be back next year.
Right.
35-year-old?
The oldest running back in the NFL, Frank. Sorry. it needs to be yelled at all times.
Did he go to
Harvard? Right. It's becoming the new Harvard thing. Which, by the way, I had a bit of the Monday night game on last night, and they went on and on about it. I'm like, wow, it seems even worse now.
Oh, my God.
It was
a little of the pregame,
It was pretty bad.
Okay, sorry.
It doesn't give me any pleasure because I think CJ's been a good team player the last couple of years, and I think the one thing that also hurts him is that it's one of these things where, you know, you can have genetic qualities for speed, for intelligence, for flexibility, for athleticism, and for toughness. And I think, you know, CJ definitely has them for speed and for athleticism, but I'm not sure he has it for toughness. I think
intelligence is a wash. I just want to make sure.
I don't know about his intelligence. Okay. I haven't heard him talk enough, but okay. I will say that, you know, some guys, their bones are just a little brittler, their tendons are a little thinner, their ligaments are a little less ligamenty, and
their hearts are two sizes too small.
Perhaps. Who's to say? There's no joy in CJville.
Well done.
Thank you. That was a lame attempt, but at least I nailed it.
No, that was the right one.
Okay.
Good job.
So I guess that's the issue, is that that's going to hurt his value on the open market, which, you know, that would normally say maybe he signs for a little less money or maybe Buffalo's willing to give him a little more money, but I think in anything, Buffalo's probably willing to give him less money because of that injury history and because of the points Paul laid out about how we're going in the future with the two kind of younger, cheaper running backs who may not have the same game-breaking talents that CJ does, but who are consistent kind of guys who can get you 4 or 5 yards when CJ frequently failed to do that. And at the same time, I'll also say that, if CJ wants anything close to a decent salary, I would put that salary into the offensive line 10 times over.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Then another running back.
Do you think that, I mean, the only thing I'm wondering is if they have an option, and I'm pleading ignorance, whether the Bills have an option at restricted free agency, where I know it's like a one-year deal and you base the price on the average of the top X number of running backs. And
you mean like franchise him or transition tag him?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's the thing. I feel like no. I feel like it's not worth it for the Bills.
It's like a one-year 14, probably like one-year $11 million deal.
Exactly.
But I think the benefit of doing that is if he goes somewhere else, like you can get a draft pick from somebody.
Yeah, I feel like that's probably not worth the risk reward. There is not...
that might be more of an off-season discussion. Then I'm just sort of throwing out there that I'm ignorant about the situation.
But otherwise, no, I would agree with Frank, or I'd agree with Scott, just because I think too, not to jump in on discussion again that we should save for February.
Or
December.
To talk about in December.
Yes, the Bills could very well lose to a point where we're talking about in December.
Or they've clinched the AFC East.
Yes, and we're just looking for other stuff to talk about.
Right.
But I think you have to judge. You know, you've got some other salaries that are yes, we're losing $17 million off the books this year in Fitzpatrick and Stevie money, which is great. But you've got to decide: are you going to keep Brandon Spikes? Are you going to, you know, keep Jerry Hughes? Marcel's coming up for a new deal. You know, you've got to kind of prioritize there. So, you know, I wouldn't say no. You never say never, especially with a dynamic playmaker, but I would be surprised if they did.
Yeah, you could probably get for $17 million a year. That's probably Hughes, Darius, and somebody over the year, like, you know, like, because they wouldn't each make 17 that year, but you could get each of those guys back and then probably upgrade a offensive line position, you know,
all of the offensive line positions,
right, as opposed to you know, re-signing a guy who's explosive but hasn't shown you much, and at a position where, frankly, the ceiling is pretty high. I mean, I'm sorry, the
floor is low.
The floor is actually high. Yeah, where, like, you can get an okay running back, you know.
Which means you have a terrible architect when your floor is high.
Right, and your floor is high. Stop dropping. Back to on the ground? I don't know.
Back to the drawing board.
Right. Let's go to Steven's Facebook questions. Do you want to summarize and read them?
I think
we should just call this Steven's Facebook questions, because Steven Grant doesn't try.
That's the name of the segment. That's the name of the segment now. So we'll just do the first one, because the second one is more about the Jets.
Facebook.com/BBillsMNY. BBILLSMNY.
If you'd like to join Steven in commenting on the podcast.
Right.
The podcast.
Maybe next fish. Right.
Steven says, has the Bills O-line shown any improvement since week one? Henderson neutralized Cameron Wake week two against the Dolphins, even if it took some tight end and fullback help. What has changed since then, and why is he doing so bad lately? Richardson doesn't seem to be getting it done either. Time for a player who's not on our team anymore, and Steven should know better. Because Steven, you know, we've disagreed over some points, but I will never say that Steven doesn't know what's going on the Bills.
True.
I'm a little disappointed that he didn't know that
Ligurski. Perhaps he was thinking of Craig Irvick.
Maybe he was thinking, right, yeah.
So Ligurski is in San Diego, where he was actually starting for a while.
So let's give him against the benefit of the doubt in that he had brain freeze, and let's substitute Ligurski for Irvick.
Say,
like, is it time for Craig Irvick, who is on the team? And as we've said, apparently good-looking enough to have sex with Doug Marone's wife.
And, you know, again,
and possibly a good lineman.
And you'll never get an argument from me for a former Badger being on the starting offensive line for this Buffalo Bills team. But I would, again, like, I think part of it is the book is kind of out on these guys. I mean, I think Cordy is coming back from injury, so that's some of it. He had a terrible game on Sunday, but I don't think he's as bad as that is normally. I think he just, again, whether you want to call it focus or something else, I think he just had a very inconsistent, you know, just took that week off for whatever reason. You know, and then I'll say, as Henderson, you know, again, talent gets you a long way, and that's why he pushed Pierce to right guard, is because he has the talent. He has the footwork. He has the agility. He has the size. I don't think he's got all the technique that you need to be the difference between a first-round NFL left tackle and a seventh-round NFL tackle is technique and kind of consistency and focus. And I think, you know, if you look at, you know, Jake Long or Joe Thomas or half a dozen NFL left tackles, that's the thing that separates them is consistent technique. And Henderson does not have that. And I think that's, you know, again, and he's going to get better, I think, if he focuses and stays keeps with it. And I hope he does, because it would be a great bargain, obviously, and it'd be good for him and good for the Bills. But, you know, he's going to need some work. The guards are terrible. Richardson's terrible. It's his first. It's just like there are probably college free agents, guys playing in the CFL right now, who could probably do a better job at guard than either of these guys.
I'm going to actually look up the CFL's standings, see if anybody in the East has broken over 500.
Okay. Not yet, I don't think. I was just watching a game on Friday, and a team took the division lead at 7-8.
God damn it.
And that is your weekly CFL update here.
I had not watched any of a CFL game in years. It was Friday night. The Sabres
Montreal just... and Hamilton are tied at 7-8. And I think Montreal has the tiebreaker.
Right, I was watching the T-Cats, the old Tiger Cats game on Friday night after the Sabres game was over and there were no other legitimate sporting events going on. The Boise State game was on, but it was at halftime. So I watched the fourth quarter of that game.
And you refused to go talk to your wife. So
she was out with my mother, so, you know, I had to do something.
The first four teams in the West would be winning the East, and then the fifth team in the West would only be a game and a half back of the lead. Calgary, Edmonton, and Saskatchewan all have clinched. Nobody in the East has clinched anything.
There you go, right
it's
there.
It's outstanding. God bless the CFL, because I think it's a great product, and I wish I could get more of it down here.
Should if this podcast thing for the Bills doesn't really work out by the end of the year, should we just switch formats? There can't be that many CFL podcasts.
Oh no, we could definitely do like an Alouette. Well, I would do an Alouettes podcast because they're probably the most. Well, them and the Argos.
But then we'd have to do it in French if
we
were doing
it in
Alouettes.
That's exactly why I don't want to do it, because it's a
French. Je parle un peu français. Non, je ne
comprends pas, monsieur.
Right, we've got to find, like, the smallest market team. Like, I don't know, Saskatchewan Rough Riders, they'd probably be in Saskatoon. I'm not sure what that market is, but I get the impression it might be small, so maybe that might be our best strategy for growth.
Mm-hmm. I got to say, part of me thinks, like, a podcast about the CFL from three Americans, not about the Argos or about Saskatchewan
just,
or something.
Just the week in the CFL.
Standing.
We're just every week. We're like, why don't they go for it on fourth down or whatever?
Right. Why does he keep kicking it out of the back of the end zone?
That would be
awesome.
It would be the best two episodes of podcast ever, and then it would probably go down.
Do we all speak a little French? Because maybe we could do that. Maybe we could just like. Paul. And now, for those of you listening,
parlez-vous French français, Lucien, la chat. So there we go. Je m'appelle Paul. I've got
there
some.
You know. There you
that's
go.
A,
yeah,
you can start
good.
There. Start
we could do it now, like do it in English, and then go. And now for our friends in French. And then we could each say something ridiculous in
French. Blah, 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 blah.
Right. Blah, 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 blah. Come up with a sentence each time.
Oh, okay. You want to do that? Do it that way.
But like, it could be a ridiculous sentence.
Okay.
Like, my pants are on fire.
Yeah, I see. Mi pantalones on fuego.
Well, fuego would be Spanish.
By the way, looking at the list of current CFL team rosters, their quarterbacks, it's like a who's who of Dolphins that failed miserably. Don Beck, Pat White. I mean, I'm just, you know, those are the first two I saw. Brian Brohm and Drew Willey, two Buffalo connections there. Drew Willey, University of Buffalo. Brian Brohm, failed Bills quarterback. But the Dolphins
the
have a special
Dolphins
player.
Feeder league for the CFL.
Ricky Ray of the Argos, who went to Sacramento State, he's the leading passer in the CFL. He looks so tiny. He looks really tiny.
You're
that's
looking at if he's on a computer though, Frank. You realize it's not actually.
That's true. I understand. I'm just saying, like he looks very like he needs a sandwich. Okay, so that was our CFL break.
This is turning into our extended CFL break dance.
The game
mix.
Plan for Sunday against the Jets should probably be stop the run, put the game in Geno Smith's hands. I guess I agree from the defensive side, but the Bills' run defense has looked shaky the past couple of games. I would say the Bills' run defense has looked shaky against Minnesota.
Yeah, I think they were okay against the Pats too.
Right, so last
and Detroit.
Games,
yeah, they were fine against Detroit.
Right, so I'm gonna go ahead and say that's like a bit of there was a bit of bad luck. There was a lot of I know what I was gonna say about the offensive line in the last one too. Isn't there something to the idea that when you're doing a read option, you're blocking better anyway because first of all the quarterback's moving and second of all you're doing some more. You're not sending as many people out on patterns, so part of the transition might be now that we're sending more people out and we have a pocket passer. So the makeup of the offense may also be exposing the flaws of an offensive line that was maybe slightly more suited to a...
So point well made, Frank.
Yeah, I pulled that right out of my
head. Yeah, you know some football.
I know it good.
Yeah, that was impressive.
Yeah, no one even thought I knew that much football. You thought I was just the pretty voice. But I agree with that, and I actually asked Sal Majorana in his Twitter chat on Monday, like, what are the Bills going to do when Kyle Orton can't move against the front four of the Jets? Let's answer that question more in the preview of the game, I guess. So let's address Steven's question more in the game. Do we have a this day in Bills history? Because I realize I'm all over the place now.
Yeah, of course we have a this. Why would we not? I spent a good 4 minutes pulling it together this week. But the fun thing about this game is it is one of it was a favorite game of mine. We're going way back to October 21st of 1991, so 23 years. Bills have just come off their first Super Bowl season. You know, they are coming into this game with a total record of, I've got to count wins, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 1. And it's a Monday Night Football game against the 0-6 Cincinnati Bengals. So, you know, the spread going this game was 13.5, Buffalo a favorite, which we see all the time now.
Right. Yeah, you see those 13.5, 2 touchdown
spreads.
Yep. Nope. The over-under of 50. So Bills get off to a rip-roaring start in this game. Kelly goes out, second pass of the game, intercepted. So he comes off the field. I remember very distinctly, he comes off the field clapping like, all right, you know, we'll get this together. This stuff happens. We'll be fine. So they stop the Bengals. Bengals can't really do much on their first series. Kelly goes out again on the next series, throws 2 good passes, and then he's like, yeah, you know what, interception. Throws another interception. So again, Kelly jogs off the field clapping. You know, it's like, all right, we'll get this together. Bengals get the ball pretty deep in Bills' territory, can't move anything, kick a 32-yard field goal. The third possession, Jim Kelly goes out there again. He's like, all right, I've really got to get it together this time. So he goes out there, and this time he waits till the third pass to throw his third interception of the game. Nightmare. So in the first quarter of this nationally televised...
that Frank is wearing his Jim Kelly jersey tonight.
Yeah. Very appropriate, very apropos. So Jim Kelly has now thrown 3 interceptions in the first quarter, feat only equaled by Trent Edwards later on in 2008. Also on Monday Night Football against an AFC North opponent, the Browns, although at this point there was no AFC North.
He was 3 of 6 with 3 interceptions, right? Anyway, let's go ahead. Sorry. Yeah. I remember that game. It was terrible.
So Jim Kelly, 3 interceptions in the first quarter of this game. In case you're wondering, his final stats, 18 of 27 for 392 yards, 5 touchdowns, and 3 interceptions. So he then proceeded to go on, throw for about 15 yards an attempt, through 5 touchdown passes, including in the second quarter a 74-yard touchdown to Pete Metzelaers, a 74 yards to James Lofton, 54 yards to Pete Metzelaers, third quarter, 48 yards to James Lofton, then a mere 24 yards to Andre Reed later in the third quarter. So the Bills, despite starting off with 3 interceptions off the bat, end up winning this game 35-16. Lofton had a career high. Hall of Famer James Lofton had a career high, 220 yards on 8 catches. Sam Weish got nailed for a penalty in this game when he felt there was offensive interference on Lofton's second touchdown by running onto the field and yelling at officials. And so he said, I don't stand the sideline with my arms folded. I go out there and motivate the players. So that was Sam Weish's take on it.
Right.
But there was also a comical moment where the Bengals got a field goal on the first turnover, decided to try a fake field goal on 4th and 6 at the Bills 23 later on, and holder Lee Johnson, who was a punter, tried to pass to Rodney Holman, and he completed it, but for only 3 yards. So it was just a very comical game, comical quarter. Bottom line is the Bills win this one 35-16 despite Jim Kelly's 3 interceptions in the first quarter, and I suppose I need a trivia question for this game as well. So looking at this list of players, I also need to report this stat. Bengals running back, the Bengals' second leading running back of this game, they actually rushed for 141 yards, Harold Green. Icky Woods, in case you're wondering, 3 carries for -1 yards, and what I believe was his might have been his last NFL game.
No cold cuts for Icky on that in this game.
So and he was not celebrating Geico style.
It's kind of an appropriate game given the terrible play that our quarterback, you know, kind of did on Sunday for most of the game and then turned it around. Again, yeah. Slightly different result in terms of overall production, sure. But, you know, got the job done.
Yeah. Yep. So it's all about getting the job done. So in this game, a Buffalo Bills safety who wore number 26 recorded his only NFL interception. This 5'7", 164-pounder from Monrovia, California, played the 89 through 92 seasons with the Bills, and his career ended. But this day was his only interception. Name that Bill.
Frank, do you have any thoughts on...
I do have thoughts. I don't want to step on your toes, but I mean, normally I go second, but I feel like maybe that's been bad luck for you.
It's true. I feel like I might have missed it once or twice the last couple weeks. So
yeah, only for spelling.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm gonna go ahead and say so from 89 to 92, defensive player, only interception. Maybe it's a trick. Maybe it's Andre Reed. Who never would have thought would have had an interception.
But no. There were some other details there about, like, wasn't it his last game or something? Yeah, or?
No, I was thinking about Icky Woods, but that was actually the first game of his in his last season. But it was he was a little smaller than Andre at 5'7", 164. He was a safety by design, so he was an actual defensive back.
Okay, so is your vote Andre Reed, even though it's...
Yeah, you know, I'm just going to say I'm not
okay.
Sure.
Okay.
I've all been right. Busy looking up CFL
okay.
stats. Which
okay.
I will,
all right. You'll brief us on after the break.
I actually do have a bit of a briefing for you after this, but go ahead. Yes.
Okay. So, you know, it's interesting you went off the road there with Andre. I'm going to stick right to the center of this one. I feel like this is kind of a layup. You know, I think Paul, you know, sometimes he does a lot of research. Sometimes, you know, he kind of puts it together in the last minute, so he doesn't quite do the kind of really interesting kind of trivia question. So this is kind of an obvious one. This is Ethiopian chef Marcus Samuelson.
That was my second choice.
Yeah. So
and then third was Men with Hats because they did the safety dance.
I think that was Men Without Hats actually.
Well, Men Without Hats then.
I thought yes. It was Men with.
It's actually Men Without Hats. He's right.
Okay.
I would wager several testicles that it's Men Without Hats.
He remembers more than I can read well.
That is true about Paul. He
can
is
better than my ability to read.
Right.
But anyway. I bet you didn't know that Marcus Samuelson actually was the chef at the first state dinner at the White House under the Barack Obama presidency.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and he was Ethiopian-born but raised in Sweden after he was adopted by a Swedish family.
So he probably didn't cook Ethiopian food for the White House. Or maybe
he... No, he did. He did. He cooked African food, and he was a state dinner for the Indian president, which is, again, is an odd choice, I guess.
Yeah. Well, you work where there's work, you go.
I guess. And it's also odd that he then went on Top Chef later. I feel like
that's a huge step down.
If you're a contestant, like if you're a judge, maybe.
Right.
But he was literally a contestant, like later on. It's like, what happened? Like,
maybe I got to eat his food, but every time I've had, I don't know about all African cuisine, but I am not a fan of the Ethiopian restaurant.
I've never done Ethiopian. It's, I keep on.
Oh man, you guys, I like Ethiopian. So Scott, you're gonna have to be the tiebreaker on that one.
Yeah. And okay. I definitely think it's a form of assault on a person's body to eat that food.
All right. Well, Paul, you'll have to pick out a good place for us.
But it might have been a bad restaurant, and I'm not trying to make any sort of value judgments about anyone, except I don't like the cuisine. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I'll have to choose one near the U Street corridor where Xandra and I used to go for that.
I was going to say the next time we come up to Buffalo, you'll have to find an Ethiopian place up there that's good. And then
we found one so far that's okay, but I want to get a good Ethiopian restaurant. We have some great Thai restaurants up here, as Buffalonians will
attest. Let's all congratulate Paul on being correct then. Just why don't you give him the accolades and tell him he was right.
I mean, Scott.
Yeah, Scott.
Scott, yes. Actually, I think Scott forgot that this was the year that Ethiopian-born, Swedish-raised chef and restaurateur Marcus Samuelson was with the Bengals, so he actually intercepted Kelly three times that game. He was on the other side.
I must have misheard the question.
Right, so it was actually Chris Hale.
Yeah,
Chef Samuelson did have three picks, but again, other sideline.
Again, that wasn't the question either, is who had one pick. So
yeah, I guess by that logic, we could say... you know, that it was Samuelson. But, you know...
For the Bills player, so yeah.
We could settle on a half point on this one.
Okay.
All right. I've now identified the small team. Well, I have to ask your question. We have a little bit of wiggle room. Edmonton, they're all in the West, by the way, shockingly. Montreal, Hamilton, Toronto, Ottawa. Actually, I should look up Hamilton, but I feel like Hamilton...
Ottawa's in... Hamilton's right near Buffalo, closer to Buffalo than Toronto, even.
It is. So we could all, by proximity, we could choose them as our Hamilton, Queensland, New South Wales, South Australia. Here we go, Hamilton, Ontario. But I realize they might actually be a slightly smaller town than I've been giving them credit for. Okay, yeah, so 519,000 would actually make them the smallest city single, but their metro size is bigger than Winnipeg. The Blue Bombers have a population in the 600s, and then it gets like to 670 if you count their surrounding area.
Where are the Saskatchewan Rough Riders? Are they in Saskatoon? Because their metro area is only two. They're in Regina.
But here's the thing. All of Saskatchewan has 1 million people. So the entire province is 1 million people as opposed to... I guess we could look up Regina.
We did. You were right anyway. 3.4 million in the greater Regina area. So they have more than enough. They're actually probably one of the larger markets. So they're fine. Sorry, Regina.
Did I get that wrong? Hold on. But Saskatchewan.
Yeah, Regina's in Saskatchewan. I thought it was Saskatoon that hosted the city.
Yeah, I know, but the
Frank found something that said Saskatchewan only had 1 million people.
The entire population of Saskatchewan has 1 million people in it as of 2011.
Oh, I'm looking at the area. I am sorry.
Okay, it's like...
There we go. It has 210,000 people.
Okay, right.
My bad.
If we're going to go in the east, Hamilton's our choice. If we're going to go with the West, which might even be, I think, at this point more fun, you got to go with Winnipeg, which is probably technically the smallest city-associated team, or Saskatchewan playing in Regina, which, you know, has more in the entire province than Winnipeg, but also, like, much smaller in the actual size of the city. Also, the other thing is, the Rough Riders, much better name than the Blue Bombers. I can't really, it's unqualified better.
I mean, other than they're both a little bit gay slang, but the Rough Riders is much more on the nose. Blue Bombers is a little more thinking.
CFL names, by the way, you know.
And it used to be, remember, Ottawa used to be the Rough Riders too, but they are now the Ottawa Red Blacks, I discovered when watching the game.
The Red Blacks, the Tiger Cats, also known as the Tie Cats or Tea Cats. The Argonauts or Argos, which is the oldest professional team, the oldest professional football club, period, in the continent. Then you've got the Alouettes, the Stampeders of Calgary, the Edmonton Eskimos, and then, as we said, the Blue Bombers and the Rough Riders. So I think we should do a Saskatchewan Rough Riders podcast, and we need to come up with a great name for it. I know nothing about the Rough Riders.
This might be a homework assignment. Maybe, I don't know, how long does the CFL season go? It goes shorter than the NFL.
Yeah, it's ending soon. The playoffs start soon because they get cold up there faster.
But they start over the summer, so they're at game 16 now. Let's see if we can find the schedule.
If I had a ton of time on my hands, I feel like we should definitely spend like 2 weeks, just get totally prepped, and then we come in one day, and it's just all Saskatchewan talk, and then see if anyone notices. See if anyone, like, and we can get Steven.
20 weeks. There's 10 teams, but they do 20 weeks.
Interesting. Yeah. And then we have, like,
The Saskatchewan Roughriders, by the way, are the defending Grey Cup champions.
They are pretty good. I remember
actually.
Yeah.
They played in Saskatchewan last time.
They're technically pretty good. And then we can
there's also the British Columbia Lions, which I just am realizing that there's strangely 5 teams in the West and 4 in the East. There's 4 teams in the East, and they're all under 500. The
hilarious thing is, if you go to the really Saskatchewan Rough Riders Wikipedia page, there are two images on the entire long article. One is a picture of a Rough Riders helmet just sitting on the sideline. I'm sorry, there are three. The second, more appropriately, is the Rough Riders celebrating their 2007 Grey Cup victory. The third is of Gaynor the Gopher, who is their mascot, I hope, or just a random gopher they put on the page.
Yeah. Oh, look at him. Yeah, okay.
There's a lot of CFL talk on this podcast. CFL talk.
The Bills are playing. The Bills are 3-point underdogs to the 1-5 New York Jets this weekend.
That's not a real thing.
Let's rewind and pretend Frank didn't say that. I have 4 very quick questions for you, Frank. How did the Bills do in their most recent game in Week 7? Win or lose?
They won.
How did the Jets do in their most recent game, Week 7?
They lost.
What is the Bills' record after 7 games?
4-3.
And what is the Jets' record after 7 games?
1-6.
Correct. Now tell us that spread again.
The New York Jets and Buffalo Bills are playing a game where if it was on a neutral field, it would be pick 'em. And the Jets are actually 3-point favorites at home. And I know you guys are sort of skeptical, and I understand the initial affront that one takes to this. On the other hand, I definitely can see the New York Jets beating the Buffalo Bills.
Oh, yeah. That's the thing. The spread actually makes a stupid amount of sense. Like, it's so stupid. It actually does make sense.
It just makes me angry.
Yeah. I mean, the Bills have last won in the Meadowlands, I believe, in 2009 during the Sanchez 47 interception game. And they still needed overtime to win in a botched Jets field goal where a holder threw an interception.
But remember Dick Enberg? Mark Sanchez throwing the ball gracefully for his 7th interception. Couldn't stop blowing him. The Jets have a very good defense, right? They have a very good front four that will probably get into Kyle Orton's face. And now, if Fred Jackson was healthy or C.J. Spiller was healthy, maybe it's pick 'em on the road against the Jets. They're not. The Bills are going to be running through Kyle Orton, and if they can get to Kyle Orton's person and interrupt the passing game, there will be trouble. Which, by the way, that's the one big offensive weakness, really, at this point, is... Well, it's running back and the ability that...
And the offensive line.
Everything runs through the quarterback, and they're going to be able to get to him.
Yeah.
Now, as far as the offense, I'm with Steven. Or, sorry, the defense, I'm with Steven. It's going to be max out on the running backs, make Geno Smith beat you through the air. And he won't, even though they have Percy Harvin now. He won't. And the only question will be whether the Buffalo Bills lose to the Jets, much the way they should have lost to the Vikings, or if the Bills will win. So Scott, give me your thoughts on this affront to, you know, it's like we're a CFL Eastern Division team. That's the level of respect we're getting into going into the Meadowlands. We, the people going in. Yes.
I am growing more accustomed to that spread as I get closer because the matchups are really not in our favor a tremendous amount. I mean, I think their offense is pretty terrible, but at this point their defense is not really is well positioned to defeat our offense in most of the things that we're trying. And you know, working in two new running backs now, potentially some changes on the offensive line, maybe Kwanjo Richardson or Williams or Urbick or somebody gets in there.
But not Ligurski.
But not Doug Ligurski.
Yes.
Well, they could go trade for him. I mean, I think that's what that
get me Ligurski.
That's what that C.J. Spiller for somebody in Seattle rumor was about. That had that trade all set up, and then he hurt himself, which I think is a lot of nonsense.
Okay.
Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. No. So I mean, honestly, like as much as I want to pick the Bills, I feel I'm still. I mean, I kind of go
as
back.
I said, are you going to go into the bye week with a lot too much confidence?
Or not, or season over. Yeah, I guess I'll say because it's on the road, I'll say this is a loss. I see this as just the way the Bills kind of could see. A 100 receiving yards on like, and he gets the rushing yards on like end of rounds and reverses, but. Total yards for the rest of the season, but just because we haven't seen him on film and they'll have some weird play design for him, he'll break like two or three, and that's all they need to beat us. Like, I could see it kind of ending that way. So I could see this being very much like a, I'll put it at 15-10 Jets.
Yeah, you were scoffing at that spread a minute
ago. I was, and now
And now you've talked yourself into a disappointing 4-4.
Yeah, I have.
All right. Paul.
Yep. By the way, for the records, for those who want them, Scott is 4-3. Frank and I are tied at 2-5. Though I have won 2 in a row, so good for. No, excuse me, I've won 2 out of the last 3. So good for me.
I feel like I should be 2. I should be 2-4-1 because really the Bills did lose last week. It's just the Vikings.
He wants the 1 point. He wants the tie.
I don't need no TL. We're good.
Yeah. This game, you know, like I said, I haven't won there since 2009. The Jets have matched up very well against Buffalo in recent years. They have the defensive front to stop what is going to be a, you know, already shorthanded Bills running game. They tend to grind it out at home. They're going to have a big home field advantage like they see always seem to have at Buffalo. I've got the Jets in a little bit more of a bigger win here. I've got them up 20. I've got them winning 23-10.
Really?
Ooh. Okay. Yeah, I'm saying 3 field goals and then a couple of TDs, one of them late. I'll say it's going to be 16-10 much of the way, like last week, but the Jets will put the dagger in the heart toward the end of the game.
Huh. Dagger. It does smell like a loss a little, doesn't it? Because they were so close to beating the Patriots last week, and the Bills are coming off this terrible thing and going on the road to the Jets.
A place where
that was by the way, I just want to say that was the worst possible thing that could happen for a Bills fan that Thursday night game. Either it was going to be like, you want the Jets to pull off the big upset and get the Bills into a tie for first, or you want the Jets to look so incompetent that it's like, oh, at least we've got them coming up on the schedule. Instead, the Jets looked like a great team that didn't even punt the ball, and they lost the game anyway.
And also, the Jets, if they had beat the Patriots, then you could say, oh, well, maybe they'll be overconfident. We can maybe catch them sleeping.
Maybe they used too much of their mojo.
But now it's like, oh, no, they're just going to be super pissed because they feel like they should have won the game and it got stolen from them, so now they're going to be angry. Like, honestly, at this point, I'm pretty sure I would take – it's hard to say, but I feel like I'd take Rex Ryan over Doug Marrone at this point just in terms of
– Oh, yeah. I've got no qualms saying that.
Yeah, game planning kind of experience. Like, yeah, I mean, he's kind of a douche, but frick, it sounds like Marrone might be a bit of a douche too, so –
I'd like to remind everyone I picked the Bills to go 4-12 this year, and I promised I would stick with that, and the Bills have 4 wins currently. The Bills are going to win this game 15-12, but okay. I'm sticking with my 4-12 season prediction.
I'm just going to ride that to the end.
I'm just going to, you know, so I sure, know that okay. does it. If you think about it long enough, it makes sense.
Yep.
Just if you haven't, if that doesn't make sense to you, keep thinking about it till next week.
Right, or smoke a lot of pot.
Yeah.
Then it will make a ton of sense.
Right. Not that anyone else here is smoking pot, necessarily. What I'm saying is I am going to stick with a 4-12 season total, but they're going to win a 5th game. I could go either way on this one. I just feel like I don't want to – I'm going to be a contrarian because I don't have a – it is a pick 'em game. It's totally a pick 'em game. I feel like it's a – absolutely the Bills could actually win the game if they go out and they have a – semi-decent performance from their running backs and their wide receivers and crawler and do what they have to do, they can beat the New York Jets, absolutely. But at the same token, if they put in a performance like they did last week against the Vikings, they're going to lose a close game. So
I don't know if they'll even lose a close game.
Right, well, anything can get away from you if you don't know if you're not playing a good game. Yeah. That's every week. So out of deference to the fact that I don't really have a strong opinion either way, it could end in a tie. Actually, you know what? I'm going to do that. 4-11-1.
There it is.
They're going to be tied at 18. 17. Tied at 17.
17.
Yep. 2 touchdowns and a field goal.
Okay.
No, that's ambitious. Tied at 13. Sorry, keep writing this down. Tied at 13.
I say we give Frank credit for either a Bills win or a 13-13 tie.
Well, you're the one.
13-13 tie, though.
Yeah, okay, yeah. That's fine. If he gets a win or a 13-13 tie, Frank gets the point.
Right. If it's a 40-40, it's a 42-42 tie, no points.
Absolutely. Right. That's totally unfair. That's not what I was envisioning at all.
Yeah.
So if you'd like to post your picks, you can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/bbillsmny or bbillsmny.wordpress.com, which is where our blog is. We post our podcasts, which are also on iTunes. If you search Buffalo Bills, maybe next year you'll find it. We're there. What else we do? We do the Twitter, bbillsmny on Twitter. That's Paul. And he'll interact with me on Twitter, so you can find me there. Scott's not on Twitter, but he follows it through his phone apps.
Yes.
And it gives
through my browser, Grandpa Corolla.
Yeah, it gives him the information. So we're doing that. We'll have another podcast next week. This is the bi-week podcast
coming up.
So normally, as longtime listeners know, we have a floating holiday at the bi-week. So depending on how the game shakes out and if there's any big news, we may do the podcast straight away, or we may push back the podcast and by a week if it really was just like the Bills won or the Bills lost and there's not much to talk about, and give the bye week a week for us a chance to for something to happen, so for us to talk about.
Or maybe I'm out of the country the first week of November, and I really can't do it then.
Right, so if you, and you will probably be, and so in which case next week we probably won't do a podcast, or 2 weeks from now we won't do a podcast. We'll almost certainly do a podcast very shortly. And then if something big happens, perhaps just Paul and I will do a podcast.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, and I was planning to be out of town for work in the first week of November, but I will in fact be here. So if Frank and I decide we're going to go a little Scotless every now and then, you know, we might do that. Just like they have gone Paulless before.
In any event, the point being, if at any time over the next 2 weeks we only do one podcast, do not be alarmed. We have not gone away. We just, that is what we do. We take our breaks just like the Bills do, because life is full of things that are not football.
Especially with this team.
Yeah, right. You can learn that, or you can hate life. Thank you so much for listening. We had a very nice time. Actually, next week let's do some Halloween stuff. We had a Halloween question we didn't get to, which was good. We'll save it for next week. And we'll talk about some more spooky stuff, and hopefully a Bills victory over the Jets. You know, Friday the 13th, Part 2, Bills live.
Bills take Manhattan.
Bills.
I think that's what we got to end that on. Yeah, that was good.
Okay, Bills take. Actually, yeah, Bills take Manhattan. That's a lot more That's too clever by half, Scott. Sorry. Full circle.
Or the Bills take Hoboken. Zing. New Jersey Jets. Sorry.
That's the name of the podcast for sure. Until we decide on doing all that. My name is Frank.
I'm Scott.
I'm Paul.
Have a good night, everyone.